Good morning. It's Wednesday, the 24th of April, and this is Govind Raj Ethiraj, broadcasting and streaming in transit, but otherwise based in Mumbai, India's financial capital. Our top stories and themes for the day. Small caps are powering back in sign that confidence levels are rising again. Gold prices take a big knock, but macro demand indicators are still strong. India's business activity grows at its fastest in 14 years. The Adani Group wants to settle an allegation with the Securities and Exchange Board of India, which it denied earlier. Apple's China iPhone sales crash. Could India benefit? And the index hits 75,000. Is it safe to invest at new peaks?
This is a Core Report with Govind Raj Ethiraj.
Broad markets are steady and small caps are zooming. Indian equity markets stayed range-bound on Tuesday, giving up most of their gains towards the end of the trading session. The BSE Sensex closed at 73,738, up 89 points, while the Nifty 50 closed up 32 points at 22,368. Some of the stocks which were strong were Bharti Airtel, Tata Motors, HCL Tech, Maruti Suzuki, Nestle, NTPC, Hindustan Unilever, and Asian Paints. Now, we've not spoken of mid and small caps for a while, except to acknowledge the fact that they were already bouncing back after the February and March fall induced by some regulatory noises. Well, now that the markets have recovered from or adjusted to the twin factors of Middle East tensions subsiding and shifts in capital flows because of high US interest rates, they are back on the run. On Tuesday, the BSE small cap index was about 46,426, and it's now inching back to the record high of 46,821. So that's only about 400 points away, touched on February 7th. In percentage terms, the index has recovered 14% from its low of about 40,641, hit on March 13th. Now, here is the amazing bit. In trade on Tuesday, some 18 stocks from the index were locked in their respective upper circuits, with only buyers seen on those counters, according to Business Standard. The list includes companies like Tejas Networks, Lloyd Enterprises, Shakti Pumps, Transformers and Rectifiers India, and Inox Wind Energy. So all of this means that investors are still hungry and hunting for value stocks in price, if nothing else. And of course, funds are still flowing into the stock markets. Gold takes a hit. All signals are still a buy. Gold is referred to as a safe haven asset. Now, this is where you run to when the world in general or specific looks shaky. Now, prices have risen along with Middle East tensions and conversely with the prospect of falling interest rates. Now, the theory once again is that if interest rates are low on debt or bonds, then gold offers better capital appreciation, though it does not offer any interest itself. Now, tensions in the Middle East have abated, though they are still lurking in the background. The other reason gold prices were and are rising is because of insatiable demand from countries like China, where the government and consumers were and are both buying. The reason is a little different here. Countries like China, and for that matter India, want to reduce their dependence on dollar deposits they hold and, in both cases, promote and propagate their own currency as a reserve currency. Now, that, of course, is a long journey. So to return to the present, gold prices saw their biggest fall in almost 2 years on Monday, of around 3%, falling towards $2,300 an ounce. As we mentioned in the Core Report, in Monday's edition, both Iran and Israel are playing down their attacks on each other, obviously because of severe back-channel pressure to do so. So to come back to gold, bullion is still up 16% since the middle of February, according to Bloomberg, adding that gold prices have risen despite advances in the dollar and treasury yields on signs that the Fed will delay its much-anticipated pivot. So the question, of course, is what does this all mean for gold prices going ahead? So it's tough to comment on the margins because that's best left to experts. But apart from the major signals on interest rates or some conflagration in the Middle East which could send prices up or down, there are no clear signals except for one thing, which is that central bank buying that we've referred to seems to be a constant, and that is the different aspect this time around, particularly with China. Incidentally, silver prices are also dropping as it's been following gold up and now down, though again, demand for silver is driven by some independent factors like the growth of the electronics industry, including battery and the overall renewables space. So it's quite interesting to see how a multitude of factors are driving prices of these most critical commodities in the world, and they all seem to be moving yet in a somewhat linear manner. Which brings us to oil. Oil prices have edged up once again after dropping to about $86 a barrel, which was a surprise drop. It's currently quoting overnight around $86.56, reflecting a relatively lower risk premium, which is still priced in. Sugar consumption poised to hit a record high. India's sugar consumption this year is poised to hit a record high as demand during the peak season gets a boost from heat waves and the mobilization of millions for elections. And as you know, it's election season in scorching temperatures, according to Reuters. Higher consumption could lift local prices and also boost margins of sugar producers such as Balrampur Chini, Sri Renuka Sugars, who we've spoken to and speak to on the Core Report, Bajaj Hindustan, among others, which would help them in making cane payments on time to farmers. Consumption of cold drinks and ice cream, and as a result, demand for sugar rises in India during summer months. But this year, demand is above average, says Reuters, as heat waves and election rallies boost consumption of ice cream and soft drinks, according to a senior official at Balrampur Chini Mills who spoke to Reuters. Speaking of weather and food, extreme weather events along with prolonged geopolitical tensions could pose a risk to India's inflation trajectory even as growth exhibits an uptrend, the Reserve Bank of India said in its latest bulletin on Tuesday. Food price pressures have been interrupting the ongoing disinflation process even as shocks from adverse climate events and geopolitical tensions add uncertainties to the outlook, the Reserve Bank of India staff said in a State of the Economy article. India is likely to experience more heat wave days than normal between April and June, as we've been reporting here, and the IMD, or the Indian Meteorological Department, said earlier this month. The Reserve Bank said that while alignment with the inflation target is gradually occurring, incoming data would provide greater clarity and confidence on the disinflation path. India's retail inflation eased to a five-month low of 4.8% in March from 5.09%, or a little over 5% in the previous month. India's business activity grows at its fastest in 14 years. India's business activity expanded at its fastest pace in nearly 14 years this month, thanks to robust demand, according to a survey released on Tuesday that also showed easing input inflation and positive jobs growth. HSBC's Flash, India Composite Purchasing Managers Index, compiled by S&P Global, rose to 62.2 this month from March's reading of 61.8. Now, these flash estimates are released approximately 1 week prior to the release of the final PMI, or the Purchasing Managers Index, or indices. Services activity rose at the fastest pace in 3 months. Meanwhile, manufacturing output rose at a slightly moderate pace in April, but remains much above long-term average. Respondents to the survey, it's a survey after all, attributed this to robust demand from both domestic and external clients. High labor costs, however, in services have brought margins under strain. Adani wants to settle an allegation it earlier denied. One of the key allegations against the Adani Group, also in the now famous Hindenburg report, was that they were offshore funds that owned shares in the Adani Group companies but indirectly controlled by the owners in India. So the larger point was that these offshore funds were tightly controlling the floating stock, which in turn was pushing up share prices and of course helping the eventual owners or the promoters of the Adani Group. Interestingly, 8 of these offshore funds have requested to settle charges levied by the Securities and Exchange Board of India by paying a penalty without admitting guilt. Now, the process of paying penalties without admitting guilt is covered under certain law or other existing law for certain kinds of transgressions. Without getting into that, Reuters says that SEBI has uncovered that 12 offshore funds investing in Adani Group companies had breached disclosure regulations and exceeded investment limits. Reuters added that it had first reported that SEBI had discovered breaches of disclosure rules by listed entities and offshore funds exceeding investment limits in August last year. It was also investigating the Adani Group's relationship with one of the funds to determine if there was potential coordination with the conglomerate's primary shareholders, an allegation previously denied by Adani. Earlier this year, the regulator reportedly issued notices to 12 offshore investors associated with the Adani Group, outlining the allegations and seeking clarification on violations of disclosure requirements and investment limits. Reuters reported that these offshore funds were reporting their investments in Adani Group companies at the individual fund level, but the regulator wanted the disclosure of holdings at the offshore fund group level. Legal representatives for 8 funds, all named, have collectively submitted 16 settlement applications to SEBI, according to reports. Apple's China iPhone sales crash. Apple's iPhone sales in China fell 19% during the March quarter, according to data from Counterpoint Research, marking the gadget's worst performance there since COVID struck around 2020, according to Bloomberg. Now, this obviously makes India a little more of an important market, given also or juxtaposed with the fact that manufacturing of the iPhone in India is steadily increasing. Apple fell to the third, roughly on par with fast-rising rival Huawei Technologies, according to Counterpoint Research estimates. And the market as a whole expanded about 1.5% as local brands including Honor Device and Xiaomi led growth. The iPhone weakness is stark as the first quarter, says Bloomberg, when China celebrates the Lunar year, usually sees more consumption. Huawei, in contrast, climbed about 70%, underlining its resurgence in the premium segment that Apple once dominated. Counterpoint's data follows analysis from IDC, which also showed global iPhone shipments falling about 10% in the first 3 months of 2024, raising concerns about Apple's ability to sustain growth as it prepares to report earnings on May 2nd, said Bloomberg. We did discuss Apple's falling global iPhone shipments on the core report earlier and did also speak to Counterpoint researchers Tarun Pathak, where we asked, among other things, if falling production could affect manufacturing in India. The answer was actually no. China remains one of the company's biggest markets, of course, but business there has grown harder after Beijing escalated a ban on foreign devices, particularly in state-backed firms and government agencies, said Bloomberg. The market's at 75,000. In our ongoing series of conversations around the markets at 75,000, of course, they're not there right now, but they did hit it. I reached out to Ajit Dayal, founder of Quantum Mutual Fund, on whether it is safe for investors to enter today. Of course, while data shows that markets are always at peaks at some point or the other, the higher they go, as they are now, it's a wise thing to pose the question and preferably to an expert who can reason why. So I asked Ajit his views on entering markets at this point and why investments at these levels would hold and what was his philosophy or, for that matter, his commitment to investors following his investment lessons of the last two decades.
So I'll go back a bit in history. You know, we launched the Quantum Long-Term Equity Value Fund in India in March of 2006. And the index was then at a peak, about 7,000 or so. When we raised the sort of inflows of capital, what is now called the new fund offering, we waited patiently. We did deploy some capital, but we sat on significant amounts of cash and waited till the markets cracked and gave us individual share prices that we liked, which reflected the intrinsic value of the company. And I'm going to tell you something very unique about Quantum. I think we are the only equity firm in the world, no exaggeration, in the world, that has the ability and the 18-year track record of predicting, estimating, calculating 2 years into the future what our NAV of the portfolio is likely to be. It's not a guarantee, it's not a promise, but really what it is from the trainings of Tom Hansberger, who was a founder of Templeton, called it Hansberger, and an absolutely legendary value investor. He taught us how to calculate the intrinsic value of a company. So let's take a very quick example here. If intrinsic value of HDFC, in our estimate, as an example, is 100 rupees 2 years in the future, and there's a whole bunch of mechanics to get there, but let's assume that's our final result, that we believe it's worth 2 years in, 2 years in the future, it'll be 100 rupees. We should have the ability to buy the stock at 25% discount to that future intrinsic value today, which means at rupees 75 or less. And if we are right, in 2 years' time, when the stock, if the stock gets to 100, we made a 33% rate of return over 2 years. That means roughly 15.5% compounded, which is twice the rate of return of a risk-free 10-year government bond in India. So we begin with that objective, that how can we make 2x that of the government long bond in India? We're not shooting sixers. We're not aiming for fours. We're aiming for that long-term return. And of course, what happens is when HDFC reaches that number, every 6 months, we are reviewing that intrinsic value. And it keeps on moving up and up and up. Unless, of course, there's a moment when if you take a Colgate or you take a Lever or you take a P&G, which we not owned for over a decade, we don't believe the intrinsic value and the market price are completely disconnected. So we may revise our numbers, but the intrinsic value is always below the market value. So we're obviously sellers and not buyers of that stock. But I think that's important to recognize that when you talk about markets at a peak, I think what we are trying to do in Quantum Long-Term Value Fund is estimate the intrinsic value of each company and then decide whether to buy it in the portfolio or not. So yes, at this point in time, we certainly are seeing more desire to trim or sell than the ability to deploy capital. But there always is some opportunity. And I'll give you a very, very broad number, which will indicate what we think about the market, as you call it. Our long-term average of this upside potential, looking 2 years out, is about 35%. And currently, that long-term average number is just below 20%. So that should give you an indication that on an 18-year time frame of history, of our track record is of 24 years. The mutual fund in India is of 18 years. But the 18-year forecasting ability that we've got, if 35% is what we thought we would make over 2 years, right now we're at 20%. So that should give you an indication that, you know, maybe it's not as exciting as it could be. And therefore, when you use the word the market is overvalued, we would tend to agree with that in the bottom-up intrinsic value calculation method that we have.
You're obviously helped along, as are other fund managers, by the fact that many of these stocks, you mentioned HDFC, have done well up to a point. The flip question, of course, is that HDFC has not done well in the last couple of years, though it has delivered over time. So how then are you adjusting? Because on all other parameters, including maybe quality of company, quality of business, quality of management, it does well. But the stock has not delivered.
Yeah, so you know, part of that is a time horizon. Right, we're not looking at quarterly numbers and monthly numbers. This morning, I happened to read a research analyst report on a company where it said it's going to have a recovery in the second half of the year. I mean, second half of the year is like, you know, a few months away, right? Our time horizon is very different from the rest of the market and the rest of the fund management industry. It's this rolling 2 years in the future. When I was working with Tom, he would have a five-year number. 5 years is too far. You can't, it's more like guesswork. 2 years, you can kind of have a better guess than you can when something's going to happen over 5 years. So it's not a question really about, you know, now. We could be wrong. It could be that HDFC flatlines for the next 2 years and we have that wrong. And it has happened. Not that we get every call right. But, you know, our assumption generally is that there will be a recovery. There'll be a strengthening of the balance sheet. But I want to go to something else that you spoke about. You said about good governance. We thought that of ICICI Bank. We were extremely happy when there was a change of management in 2019 in the bank. We went into the stock. It's done very well. And recently you heard me or read about me grumbling about ISEC and how they've done the merger. And that can actually hurt the entire ICICI franchise. You know, there's nothing stopping ICICI Bank from hurting minority shareholders in, you know, in its listed insurance company, in its listed AMC, or in any affiliate. So there's no protection now if you're a minority shareholder of ICICI entities because of the way they mistreated and missed the ISEC swap ratio. On top of that, this will have an impact on the parent company's valuation. Look, at the end of the day, a prime minister goes around the world. He talks, rightfully so, about how great India is. It is literally because of his superpower India image that tens of millions of investors have jumped into mutual fund since he became prime minister 10 years ago. Literally, it's not because of AMFI's slogan of mutual funds are here. That's a sideshow. It's a prime minister talking about how great and vibrant India is. And now you've got governance as an issue. And of course, the way the mutual funds have voted for this ISEC merger is something which SEBI should really investigate, because I think they can kill the entire story that the prime minister has built.
May I bring you back to the stock? Because, you know, this is an issue we've talked about and we will come back to later. So, you know, one of the things that you talk about in your fund is, you know, that you pick stocks which are trading at a discount to intrinsic value, which in turn lead to that two-year promise that you talked about. So how do you, I mean, this is really for people who are trying to, again, enter the market, right? How do you pick a stock or identify a stock that's conceptually at a discount to its intrinsic value at this time? I mean, or how do you do it? Or how does a fund manager like you do it?
Like, we've got a whole bunch of research analysts who look at different sectors. They go to meet companies, they go to meet suppliers, they check what's happening in the world. in that sector, understand the managements, understand the balance sheets. We have 600,000 human hours of effort in building our research database. There's no AI. There's no applied intelligence or artificial intelligence or algorithms here. It's all human effort in that sense. So it's a long process. And what we've seen, as I indicated to you, on an overall portfolio basis, there is upside, there is interest, but it's not as exciting an opportunity. And my advice to individual investors is, whether they go directly or via mutual funds, if they have 100 to allocate into the stock market, they should allocate only 25, 33, or 50. And they should keep the other dry powder and wait for something to happen. And that something could be something locally, which impacts the stock market prices, or it could be something globally, which impacts stock market prices. And I'll just take a flashback to Lehman. So at the time of Lehman, the intrinsic value was here and the share prices collapsed. When we studied the impact of Lehman on the economy, we found a very marginal impact on intrinsic value of most companies. So our upside potential in November 2008, we predicted 2 years out, we would make a 177% rate of return in 2 years. That was an upside potential prediction and estimation. Of course, we don't go out and talk about it because you can't make forecasts, or rightfully so, as per SEBI. But that was the internal number. So that's why we told people that dry powder we told you to have during the brick madness, give us the capital now, because now is a great time to invest. And we actually see intrinsic value still high, but stock market prices correct. Same thing with COVID. Intrinsic value for most sectors, barring tourism, hotel, was pretty much there. But stock markets went down. And we expected a 77% upside potential in March 2020, looking out 2 years in the future. And it was achieved in both cases.
So at this point of time, if you were to lean on the research and all the research effort that your teams are putting in, what is it that's popping up on the screen? Either sectors or industries, or I'm assuming you can't talk companies, but...
We can't talk companies, but what I will say is that 2 years ago, when we were buying the two-wheelers and the automobiles, it looked like a contrarian play. And that played out well. I told you our horizon is a bit long-term than the rest of the market. So what we are seeing now, I can tell you in terms of sectors, if you will, what we've seen in the last year or so has been that the financial services industry, not the banking, but the non-banking financial service stocks looked attractive to us. ISEC was one example. Again, going back to the same story, you know, and that looked very attractive to us as a sector. So we think as Indians are saving more, the insurance, the AMCs, the brokerages will do well, as opposed to Indians borrowing for home loans, which has been the story for much of the last 2 decades. So I think that's a sector that we've liked and have invested.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Gordon. It's good to see you again.
That was the Core Report with me, Govindraj Ethiraj. Do stay connected with more of our coverage at the Core. You can check out our website or sign up to our newsletter for our exclusive stories, one in-depth feature a day on www.thecore.in. Do also track us on LinkedIn, where we usually post synopses or extracts of our top stories and interviews. We would love your feedback on how we can make business more interesting and relevant, including, of course, India's vibrant manufacturing sector. So write to us at feedback@thecore.in. And thank you once again for listening.